This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to State of Health, the podcast where patients put healthcare decision makers and thought leaders in the hot seat. I'm Gunnar Esiason. On today's Three Questions episode is Governor Spencer Cox from Utah. The rule in the Three Questions episode is simple. The role of the interviewer will flip halfway through the show. A quick note about today's episode, you'll hear me refer to Governor Cox as Lieutenant Governor Cox throughout the show because this episode was recorded in 2020 before the governor was elected to office. With that, let's get to it. All right, we're here with Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox from Utah. Lieutenant Governor Cox, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So something super cool about you is you actually have a brother and a sister with CF. So you're part of the stakeholder family that we like to talk about here on the State of Health, but also you're a policymaker. So this is sort of a double whammy interview for us today. Thanks again for joining. So I just want to jump right into it. In the last few years, biopharmaceutical innovation has yielded amazing results with the development of transformative therapies to treat a number of rare diseases that at one time seemed impossible. What is Utah doing to help support such innovation, and what are you most excited about in the future?
Well, so Utah has been a real leader in the biosciences sphere and working in life sciences and with some of the technologies that have been so critical in isolating genes and finding medications that can impact those genes. I'm most excited exactly about that. The future is so bright for young people with CF. My brother is, he's 40. My sister's 41. And, you know, when they were born, the average life expectancy of kids was 11 or 12. And so we've certainly seen progress being made. And my sister's is far worse off than my brother. Her PFTs are down in the mid-20s often now, and obviously something we're concerned about. But with the new drugs coming on, she was finally able to get on Trikafta, and it's made a huge impact in her quality of life and kept her out of the hospital for a lot longer than she's been out of the hospital in quite some time. And those are miracles. And so when I talk to parents of newborns and others, I get to tell them, like, there's every indication that your child will live a normal, healthy, long life just because of the new drugs that we have and what's on the horizon. So I'm very excited about that. We've been working also here in Utah to make sure those with cystic fibrosis have access to those drugs. That's really important. We found that there was some flaws in the insurance that we provide to our state employees that was not allowing them to get access to those drugs. And so we jumped right on it, and we were able to make some changes to help that happen. And working very closely with the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation here in the state of Utah as well, I'm a member of their board. We have to have the innovation, but we also have to make sure that when we have that innovation, that people get a chance to utilize the innovations that are coming.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, a breakthrough is nothing if people can't actually use it. That leads me to my second question. Of course, on the show, we do like to solicit questions from constituents of the policymakers who are kind enough to join us. So today we have a question from Summer Love. She is a woman living with cystic fibrosis in Utah. And she asks, why does the state of Utah not allow disabled Medicare beneficiaries under the age of 65 to have access to Medigap plans? Now, of course, for our listeners who may not know, Medicare is the federal subsidy that covers insurance or health coverage for people who are either over the age of 65 or legally disabled. So do you have any comments on that?
Well, yeah. So, Summer's amazing. I've met Summer before. She's incredible. She's a wonderful advocate. This is a question that I had not received before. So, it is not prohibited in Utah to have Medigap or supplemental insurance. In fact, about 10% of Utah Medicaid recipients also have other commercial insurance right now. And currently we have about 36,000 Utahns receiving Medicaid due to a disability. We also provide some other things, dental, vision, behavioral health, and pharmacy coverage that a lot of states don't. And so, and we recently expanded Medicaid. Utah is one of the red states that didn't expand right in the beginning. We have since done that. And so a lot of people are getting coverage now that didn't before. And of course, disabled Utahns are the most vulnerable populations that we have. And we want to continue to provide a full continuum of services. And so this is one I'd love to work with her and others on more. We do have some really incredible constituent services teams. And if anybody's listening to this, if they do have questions regarding eligibility, they can call. The number is 801-538-6417. That's 801-538-6417. And hopefully we can get those questions answered and help people who are eligible to obtain coverage.
Absolutely. And we'll get that in the show notes. So I'll make sure I pass that along to Summer as well. So as of this recording, Utah has been cited as one of the many states across America seeing a quick rise in COVID-19 cases. Sort of seems like the entire world is going through this right now. What is Utah doing to make sure people living with chronic conditions have continued access to care as the health system begins to stress? You know, I think we've all seen, you know, images on the news of what it looks like when the hospital wards are just quickly filling. So, you know, there's obviously people with chronic conditions, you know, whether it's CF or something else, you know, maybe someone who needs dialysis, you know, they have to access these medical systems. So how is Utah making sure that moving forward, access to care is going to be, you know, something that people can get a hold of?
Yeah, Gunnar, obviously, this has been, we're concerned about the death toll. That's first and foremost. But second is not overwhelming our healthcare system, because that's when the morbidity rate tends to go up. And so we are working really hard to do that. Our goal has always been to keep our system, our ICU beds at 75% of capacity or less. We are one of those states that have seen a spike. And you're right, it's happening across the nation right now. I think all but two states are seeing increases right now. The good news for Utahns is that the spike we're in right now, we are seeing it leveling off. We hope that that's the case and that it will start to trend down very soon. The last 2 weeks, we've seen very little growth, but the numbers are too high. And we are starting to get to that point where we are seeing stress in our ICU beds, not our overall healthcare beds, but our ICU beds. We do have one hospital that reached capacity. So we're load leveling and having to move people to other hospitals. And that's deeply concerning. So just last week, the governor announced some major changes to protect our frontline workers and to lower the rate of spread. And that includes some mask mandates for much of the state that did not have them before, working on some limiting of social gathering sizes, which is where we're seeing a lot of the spread right now. We're actually doing pretty well in schools. Colleges have driven this spread, at least in the state of Utah. That's where we saw our first spikes when college kids came back to school. We have about 60,000 kids on two campuses in Provo, which are really close together. And that's where we saw it. Now, unfortunately, it is spreading to the rest of the state. And so with those limitations now on social gatherings and more people wearing masks, we think we're already starting to see the results of that and bringing it down. That being said, we are preparing if those numbers, hospitalization numbers, continue to grow, making sure we have excess capacity, that we get the personnel we need to treat people and make sure that we don't cause any harm to those who have coronavirus, but also to those who don't and need access to these beds.
You're absolutely right. The State of Health will be back in a minute.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And just so our listeners are aware, we are recording this at the end of October. So there's usually a little bit of lag time between when the show is recorded and when we publish, but we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that in the interim. And I do think you're absolutely spot on there when you say that, it's the local governments need to have the ability to flex to really make sure that that spread is contained and to keep the vulnerable population as healthy and as safe as possible, which, not only includes my family, but your family and Summers as well. And I think we're all grateful for the fact that, we're asking some folks around the country right now to make sacrifices so that our at-risk population stays safe, healthy, and the healthcare system is there in the case of an emergency.
Yeah, and it really is about being selfless, right? Because you and your family, whoever you are, might be just fine, but it's spreading it to others who will not be. And we do the best to keep our most vulnerable safe. My sister, she doesn't go out much at all. She's very careful. My brother teaches school, and fortunately they were able to find a classroom that where they had done some. It was a science classroom. They did science experiments in like this glass room kind of connected to the room. And he now teaches inside of that glass room with a microphone and speaker to his students. So he's looking at them through the glass, but they're not in direct contact. And so we're finding new ways to protect people, but it is a sacrifice and everyone needs to sacrifice a little bit so that our most vulnerable can be protected.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, the role of the interviewer will flip. Now, this is a three questions episode, so I want to flip the microphone around and give you the opportunity to be the interviewer.
Well, I'm so glad. I don't often get to be on the other side of the microphone, so this is a big deal for me. All right, Gunnar. So patients with CF have really been social distancing forever. In fact, there's a movie that talks about being 6 feet apart. Now, we all know what it means to be 6 feet apart, but what advice can you give to those who are new at this and how can we do things better?
So, I think one of the most important things to know about CF is that really any sort of virus, whether we're talking about coronavirus, whether we're talking about the flu or even RSV common cold, threatens to be life altering for people with CF or other, chronic conditions. So it really starts with educating and understanding one's own surroundings. I think I look back to my childhood and I think about my mom and all she used to do to make, our home as safe as possible, whether it was, friends coming into the house or me going to, sports practice or whatever. Everyone was always aware of my own condition and what needed to happen really to create a safe environment. And I think, back to the spring when there was such a hesitancy to wear masks and sort of, start washing your hands. Like it, to me, it was like, I was mind blown that people weren't already washing their hands, So I think it starts with, a unified message from the top and also from, employers and restaurants and folks who have the most to gain and the most to lose should coronavirus spread inside the community. I think that I've always felt that, there's so much, economic loss to be had if the coronavirus does spread that, the most incentive to keep a community safe are the people who are, at stake there. And I think that it comes down to, as we were talking about before, some selflessness and some real understanding of what can happen in the community. And I always say my golden rule is if I ever feel uncomfortable, I'm more than happy and willing to remove myself from a situation. I'm a graduate student right now. And, we have the opportunity to use a flex in-person learning, model right now. And I've just been doing it from home. I feel like I know what's best for me. I know what's best for my family and I know how best to protect myself. And I think there needs to be a sense of urgency for folks who are in the higher risk population and the ability to do so if needed.
What I loved about that answer is that this idea that these are things we should have been doing anyway. Yeah. The one that always gets me is I cringe whenever they give out awards in school for never missing a day of class, because what that incentivizes is people going to school sick or going to work sick, right? And we shouldn't be doing those things. I hope that coming out of this, there will be a new appreciation and more remote learning. So if you do have a cold, go to school, right? Because it puts people like you and my siblings at risk, and really it's just good. It's just good citizenship, not to be passing our colds and other things around. So I love that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I it's almost like if someone's coming to work sick, you know, everyone else is going to get sick eventually too, yeah. Right? Like then you're not only dealing with one person's lost productivity, you're dealing with an entire team's lost productivity.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, number two, talk to us about cost sharing and the benefit to patients.
So I think one of the things that I do want local and state governments to really recognize is the burden of healthcare on individual families, you know, and what patients go through to access medicine and or even, you know, hospital medical procedures and things like that. You know, it's the long-term benefit of making sure that a patient can afford the care that they are trying to do has been well documented. You know, maybe, you know, short-term costs and things like that do pay dividends down the road, because people are able to be active, they're able to be healthy because they're receiving the care that they need, the care that they require to be able to either stay in work, to be able to stay in the economy, and to make sure that they can access things that they need to be able to do. And, you know, we were talking about this before, you know, what is, you know, what are states willing to pay for patients to stay in the economy? And I think that's something that, you know, you made quite clear that Utah is willing to do for its citizens and to make sure that people can not only afford the care that they require, but also can afford to stay within the economy.
Very cool. Thank you. And last question, what can our state and others do to better make sure people with disabilities are included in the economy?
So I think this is one thing that we're going to take away from a positive of this pandemic. You know, I'm starting to look for positives. We've been here, you know, we've been doing this for, you know, 8 or 9 months now. And, you know, my family, most people I know with CF, I'm sure your family, we've been craving this option for remote work. We've been craving this option for remote telehealth. You know, these are things that I think should be, you know, tried and true, because one of my most important, you know, things that I like to talk about is the patient experience and how the patient experience has value for employers. You know, people with CF and other rare diseases and other chronic conditions, we learn how to manage our time from a very early age. We learn how to balance workflows. We learn how to balance so many different parts of our lives that I can't help but see how those can be positives for any certain employer, right? Employers want disciplined employees. They want people who are going to do a good job. They want people who are going to be hard workers. And I think about any person that I know living with CF or any other rare disease that I've met through my years, and I'm like, those are skills that somebody was, you know, that somebody's owning a business wants to have on their workforce. The thing that they have to do or be willing to do to access those skills is provide an environment where that person with a disability can work for them. And, you know, I think about the sudden transition we had to remote work, and it just feels like this has been something that's been coming for so long. Why not make this the standard, you know, moving forward? Why not make employing people with disabilities a thing? And I've always encouraged people living with CF to put that on their resume, to make sure that your employer knows what you're doing, because it shouldn't be seen as a negative. It should be seen as a positive affirmation for the skills that you are bringing to the workplace.
I love that. You may be interested. I actually launched a telework initiative last year, and the idea was that by the end of this year, we would have 2,500 state employees working from home. And I think we have 10,000 state employees working from home right now. And I couldn't agree more. It's good for workers. What we found is, I did a study for 6 months, and we measured everything that they did. And what we found was that, of course, people drove less, so there was less pollution in the air. We have an air quality problem here in Utah, which is helpful. It cut down on traffic congestion because they weren't on the road. Their mental health actually improved, done correctly. They had more time with their family, more flexibility. They didn't have those long commutes that were, you know, drive everybody crazy. And their productivity actually went up 22%. Like, if you could do it in any other industry, if I told you I could increase your productivity by 22%, you would jump all over that. And the best part of all is exactly what you said. It gives people in remote areas, people in rural areas, opportunities to work that they wouldn't otherwise have. And it gives those with some sort of underlying condition who maybe can't be in the workplace opportunities to do meaningful work and contribute in meaningful ways to the economy. There's just almost no downside to this. And so I'm with you. I think it's, we all have to start looking for some positives coming out of this. Access to telehealth is another one. Teleeducation is another piece of this that I hope we won't go backwards, but that we'll find ways to implement these technologies in meaningful ways. So thank you so much for letting me join you today and for answering my questions.
You know, this is great, Lieutenant Governor Cox, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Gunnar.
That's all for this week. Be sure to join us next week. New episodes come out every Wednesday morning wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at G17Esiason, and you can check out my website at gunnaresiason.com. If you like what you heard today, be sure to subscribe to The State of Health and then leave a rating and a review. A big thank you to Governor Spencer Cox for today's interview. State of Health is produced by Bob Dwyer. Thanks to Odyssey for making this podcast possible. We'll see you next week.